What is up, good citizens of Crypt Nation? You crusaders, you. How is everybody doing? I hope you guys are doing well. And Pete's, how are you doing? I love you, brother. I'm glad you're healing up.
Yeah, it's been a rough situation where I've had this cold, and I feel like it's time to get things hot again. So I am back. I have my box of Kleenex with me. I'm not going to miss this episode.
Not for the world, not for the world. All right. Well, guys, you know how we like to start off every weekly fire. This is the 13th episode.
It is now one quarter that we've been doing this show, and I have to say, it's becoming one of my favorites.
It really is. You know, we get into some pretty heated debates. We answer crypto's most burning questions, and we talk about times that, you know, we've been burned, and we talk about, you know, smoke and mirrors and illusions and all sorts of different stuff. This is our little podcast radio show. We like to show some character and have some fun in this one. Then we get a little bit more serious with the interview. So if this is your first time tuning into the Weekly Fire, welcome. And we got a big episode planned. And we always start off with the weekly weather report. So I'll kind of jump into that. And what do I mean by the weekly weather report? Basically, we're just looking at price action and we're looking at volume on the main cryptocurrencies, about your top 10. And today, today's Saturday. Yesterday, Friday, the 25th of October, we saw a $1,000 price rise in the matter of an hour on Bitcoin. And this is obviously great for anybody who was long, bad for anybody who was short. And you could see there was plenty of people that were short and that were building short positions that got squeezed out, which always triggers a cascading effect. But
and this is important to mention, this happens right before the last Friday of the month, right, which is when the CMA futures expire.
Right.
That's when you're going to see this manipulation happen and people get fucked over.
Yeah, that's a great point. Super great point. People are always trying to close positions out or settle before the end of the month. Okay, so what am I seeing here? We've been talking about the 8K level, on all the past episodes. We hit the 8K level, and then I got tricked. I was the quintessential case of the guy who got how do you say it? I don't know. Made the wrong bet. In this case, last week I said I was starting to feel pretty bearish on Bitcoin and thinking that 6K level was looking ripe for the testing. And we broke the support at 7,400. And when we broke that support, I said, okay, guys, I've been saying 8K was going to be the bottom, but it looks like it's not. And it looks like we're going down going down more. So I'm going to step out and I'm not going to keep this long. And what happened was a lot of people were thinking that because that range got broken. People's stop losses got hit and they're like, all right, we're out. And then this is just classic, you know, the market moves against the majority. So as most people are saying, oh man, I'm starting to feel pretty bearish. The market does the opposite and runs up very hard and very quick. So in last week's episode, I was talking about how I'm starting to feel a little bearish. And in about 1 hour, that's all it takes, just 1 hour to completely change a guy's mindset. I'm feeling pretty good. I'm also liking what we're seeing in some of the altcoins. I like Ripple at these levels. It's, 30 cents for one XRP token. And love it or hate it based on the fundamentals of it or whatever. If you don't think it's, you know, valuable, I just am looking at the charts and it just seems like, you know, it's about to attack its 200-day moving average with some force. Its ratio against Bitcoin looks pretty strong. Historically, we've been in accumulation patterns all throughout the 20 cent to 30 cent range, meaning you can tell that there's lots of support. So I think that we're primed for another test of around 45 cents or 50 cents here in the next couple weeks. And if we could maintain above that, above, you know, 50 cents for any substantial period of time, meaning a couple weeks, if we could hold above 50 cents, you know, we're looking at going into the dollar range for sure. So that's that. And then also,
wow.
Absolutely. People people hate on, like, you always have to follow the hate, right? The majority of the market hates Ripple. And that's why it pumps so damn hard. Because, you know, a lot of just, there's so much emotion in it. And so it's kind of one of those things where you have to follow the greed and the fear. And I think a lot of people hate Ripple so much because they fear it. They fear that this system could take the place of Bitcoin. Not saying it can, but you know, they fear all the, you know, PhD economists, and they fear all of the chairman of the Fed who is a advisor to Ripple. They say, well, Ripple's just a remake of everything that we didn't like in the beginning with the centralized financial institutions and all such things like that. But at the end of the day, you know, Ripple Labs and XRP have, you know, some of the smartest people in the world working on this. And so, you know, I'm feeling pretty bullish on that. And there's recourse in the Ripple network too. You know, in Bitcoin, there's no recourse, which is also one of its strong factors, is that, you know, if I send, or if I make a mistake in the Bitcoin network, it's like, it's gone forever. But with Ripple, it's like, there's Ripple Labs. So, you know, more or less you can, you know, you could have a little bit of recourse, and recourse is an output of centralization. So there's always going to be, you know, centralization versus decentralization. Sometimes it benefits you, sometimes it doesn't. And also the last thing is, like, Ethereum, it's another good example of how there's, you know, in theory, a little bit more recourse than Bitcoin, because they did that hard fork, which rolled back the chain and split into Ethereum and Ethereum Classic. So they showed that, you know, Ethereum is, you know, more centralized actually than Bitcoin. And pros and cons, but that's just kind of what I'm seeing in the weather report. We still have a long ways to go before we're in any sort of full raging bull mode. I think we still need to consolidate, and I think that we need to still build back up a strong base leading to the halving. But yeah, that's kind of what I'm seeing, Pete. Anything you wanted to add before we move on?
We could go on and on forever about that topic itself. Maybe we should have a whole smoke and mirrors segment on centralization versus decentralization, and is Ripple going to essentially be the killer app, whether we want it to or not? I think that'd be a really interesting topic for another time, though.
Yes.
For now, we're going to move into hot or not.
Yes, this week, again, here's why we do this segment, so you guys could see trends unfolding before your very eyes. In 3 weeks ago, maybe it was 2 weeks ago, I said that I think we're going to be able to see a altcoin that goes 10x in a 7-day period. And we almost got that this week. We got a 666% rise out of a mega scam token called CryptoNex. So I was like, CryptoNex, what the heck? It just went up 666%. What the heck is this thing? And it traded, you know, $11 million. And so it fit our criteria. And I clicked the website, and it's this random exchange that looks like nobody's ever visited it. And they're saying that, you know, they're doing all this massive volume. So unfortunately, I'm going to exclude this CryptoNex from our discussion, just because it just, something feels off about it. But something more realistically, you know, we have this other coin called Origin Sport. ORS is the ticker, traded $10 million over the last 7 days, and it rose 175%. Then we have Spendcoin, ticker SPND, traded $4 million, and that marked up 145% over the last 7 days. And lastly, we have a company called AAVE, and their ticker is LEND, LEND. Not sure why it's not AAVE, but whatever. Traded $3.5 million, and on that volume, they got up 95% over the last 7 days. But Pete's, what's not so hot these days? Everybody that's traded about $1 million or more.
Well, just to be fair, I have never heard of any of those in the top hot list. So I may have to do a little bit of homework, or they may fall. We'll see if they make it into the not list. So many have. What's not hot this week? There's not a whole lot of things up in smoke right now. The market's been so great, especially today. A lot of things have recovered. So if you're losing right now, what the hell is wrong with you? So we have DAX down 11%.
And it's kind of crazy. It's like the biggest loser of the week that's traded more than $1 million is only down 11%. It's like you could start to see that trend that, hey, sellers are starting to weaken.
Yeah, absolutely. And then SmartShare is only down 8.6%. And then Atlas Protocol, which is the only name on this list that I've heard of at all,
yeah,
is only down 8.5%. So not even an ouch this week, just more of a...
Just a little, what's it called? Like a little burn, baby.
Little
burn.
Sting, little sting, little pinch. No big deal. It'll recover.
Yep. I think they'll recover. And I think it would be interesting to, I wonder if like 1 week, it's just like there's no losers. Like nobody's in the red this week. That would be interesting. Don't know if that'll ever happen because there's always going to be coins that are abandoned and stuff. And
there's always going to be, even in the most bullish market conditions, some tokens are just going to be sold off for others.
Yeah, no, I agree.
The cream will rise to the top.
Always does, my friend. All right, smoke and mirrors. You guys know we love this segment where we talk about, you know, this is a little debate section where we talk about scams versus not scams or opportunity costs. So today, Pizza Mind is going to walk us through the opportunity cost between trading and mining. Pete, take it away, brother.
So when I got into crypto, it was building mining rigs, and I thought it was an incredible opportunity to essentially double my money every 3 years. That was kind of the benchmark that people were shooting at, and I thought, wow, that's a really great deal. However, if you look at that now through, I guess, more educated eyes, which I have now versus when I first started, I'm looking at the opportunities for trading. While it's much easier to mine coins right now because difficulties are so low and it's actually not even profitable to cover your own mining costs at this time, you just simply have to accumulate and then sell off, you know, 3 years down the road. And it seems like we hit a big bubble every 3 to 4 years, you know, right in line with the halvings of Bitcoin. So that's kind of an expected place to cash out now. But you have all this crazy infrastructure that you have to keep up. You have electricity bills that could be, you know, $10,000 a month.
Mm-hmm. And we've heard some horror stories about people doing mining operations on behalf of other people and not getting their electricity bill paid. And he's like, wait, whoa,
yeah.
I just mined all this Bitcoin for you and then you're going to go ghost and stiff me on this $10,000 electricity bill?
Yeah, that's a real story that we just heard last week. So there's a lot of things that go into it. There's also a lot of time. I mean, sure, trading takes a lot of time too, but then let's say 2x every 3 years for mining is the standard that miners hope to achieve. Trading, on the other hand, 2x every 3 years is in a traditional marketplace is also really, really great. But when it comes to crypto, that almost seems like you're doing something wrong.
Right.
I mean, if you're a smart trader, you're following, you know, the patterns, you're following the trends, you're accumulating at the bottom, you're distributing at the top. And at the top of these runs, I mean, of course, you have to hold for a very, very long time for these things to happen. But you're making 10x, 20x every 3 to 4 years, maybe more, depending on what you're holding. Mm-hmm. Some of those coins aren't going to make it. Let's be honest, no one's going to hit 20 for 20 or 100 for 100. You're going to have a significant amount of your portfolio go to zero. You have to have a crazy appetite for risk.
Right.
And if you're day trading rather than just holding, you know, you can do certain strategies where you're trading grids, where you're just simply buying the dips and selling the peaks as regardless of what the market conditions are.
And that's okay too. But and you're talking about grid trading where like you code bots to do that or you're doing it manually?
You could do either. I mean, the bot definitely is easier to do. It takes less time. So the opportunity cost of mining seems a lot greater than going into trading. The only time it makes sense to mine over trading is when you're at the peak of a bull market and Bitcoin's hash rate is going crazy and just the return of, you know, actually buying this asset, you really just have a lot to lose over that time. And at that point, you might want to turn on a mining rig and say, hey, it's just a lot easier to get a share in this pool. But those times haven't happened in a couple of years. I turned off all my mining rigs not this August, but last August, because it was no longer profitable to mine.
When are you planning on turning those puppies back on, or are you?
I don't know if I ever will, to be honest.
Hmm. Interesting.
There may be certain coins in certain market conditions where it might make sense for 6 months to a year to mine them rather than just buy them outright. But that might not be till next August. We'll see.
Yeah. Well, I thought that was pretty comprehensive. I think you covered it. I don't know if I have much to add there, other than like when you're trading, there's also opportunity cost between the assets that you're holding. So you're generally going to want to find, you know, it sounds like a no-brainer, but you're going to want to find the assets that are moving up against the dollar quicker than other assets that are moving up against the dollar. Because, for instance, if something is moving up, moved up 100%, it looks like there's a lot of momentum, but something else moved up, you know, only 50%, and you were holding on to the 50% coin, well, that's a 50% opportunity cost because you could have been in something else. So it's always, you know, there's this, basically what I'm trying to say is there's this quote that says, in a bull market, go long the strongest. In a bear market, go short the weakest. And basically what it's saying is like you find the coin or the couple coins that are trending the hardest. Right now it's, that honestly looks like the 0x coin because it is above its 200-day moving average, both against Bitcoin and against the dollar, which a lot of coins are still you know, well below that. So, you know, it looks like the 0x coin has, you know, flipped its script. And I think one of the reasons why is because they're implementing some new staking features and just adding some more value and utility to it fundamentally. So, you know, stakers have been able to see that and acquire more coins on the market because they know that this new protocol change is coming. But anyhow, yeah, you guys always have to be thinking of opportunity cost, and even not in crypto, but in, you know, anything, there's an opportunity cost to holding cash, right? Holding cash in your bank account, you're not making any interest on it, really. I mean, whatever, 0.0001%. So there's an opportunity cost for holding cash because you should be, you know, if you have spare cash, investing in the market, right? Maybe the S&P, which, you know, averages 8% a year for the last 100 years or whatever it is, or the Dow Jones. It's like you want to be in something that is appreciating in value. So kind of enough on that.
Yeah, there is one more thing I want to add. I want to break it down just a little bit further, though, as far as opportunity cost. With mining, you know, are you mining Bitcoin directly and stacking sats that way, or are you mining altcoins and then exchanging them into Bitcoin? There's an opportunity cost there. And the same thing with trading. Are you trading against Bitcoin pairings and stacking sats that way, or are you trading against USDT and trying to stack dollars? What are the opportunity costs in that regard? That's something you have to calculate into your equation too. And
100%.
This past year, we've only seen one altcoin actually gain value against Bitcoin for most of the year, and that's Chainlink.
Link?
Yeah, that's it. But there's several other coins that have gained some US dollar value. So that's another thing that you have to really be cognizant of when you go into these things, because that's always going to be fluctuating as well. So I just wanted to add that last point in before we move on.
No, that's a great point. And I'm even going to take it one step further.
Please do.
Yeah, like when you guys are looking at your portfolio, whether it's every week, every day, every month, and you size up your portfolio, is this portfolio worth? You will start to see deviations in your Bitcoin value and your US dollar value of your portfolio. And what do I mean by that? Basically, during certain market cycles, you will be up in your Bitcoin portfolio value, but you will be down in your US dollar value. Or alternatively, you might be saying, oh my, and this happened massively towards the end of 2017 when people were, you know, really high up in their dollar value, but they were actually losing value against Bitcoin because Bitcoin was stronger than most things. So you're going to have to always balance your portfolio and see how much is this portfolio worth in dollars today and how much is it worth in Bitcoin today. And then you want to be able to kind of graph that out and see, oh my gosh, I'm going up in dollars, but I'm going down in Bitcoin. But that's because Bitcoin is going up faster against the dollar than the other coins that you're holding. So if you guys need to rewind that and re-listen to it, it's kind of a heady concept, but just know that you need to balance your portfolio in both US dollar and Bitcoin.
Yeah, so you can get that balance, but what is the unit of account? Is it BTC or USD that really matters to you? That's something that you really should decide when you first get into this space, is what unit of account are you going to have? And there's all kinds of different ways of calculating that and filing taxes and stuff based on what your unit of account is. And BTC is a unit of account now. It's more than just a currency.
Hey, Crypt Nation, real quick. We just want to give you guys a quick reminder that everything we do here at Crypto 101 is brought to you by our good friends and our sponsors over at eToro. This is the best place. I mean, it's truly the best place that you could be buying and selling cryptocurrency. They've been around since 2007. Doing all sorts of different, you know, stock exchange stuff. And in 2013, they introduced crypto trading. So these guys are pros and they're operating in well over 100 countries. They've got about 11 million users now. So we think that it would be pretty wise if you guys join the pack. What do you think, Pete?
eToro is kind of like the Nike of crypto exchanges. If you don't have Nikes on your feet, you're probably not going in style. Everyone's got to try it out at some point. So definitely check out eToro.com/crypto101 to sign up today.
Yeah, guys, if you guys use that link, eToro.com/crypto101, that really helps us here at Crypto 101. And we really love you guys to use that link. Deposit $50 if you want, you know, start trading it out. Or if you don't feel comfortable putting money in, that's no problem. eToro is the only platform that I know of that allows you to do something called virtual trading. So basically what is virtual trading means, it's not real money. They give you $100,000 of fake money and they say, hey, go try our system. Go get comfortable placing an order. Go get comfortable reading a price chart. Get comfortable playing with no risk. And then once you're comfortable, then you could go ahead and deposit real money and start making bets. But I just love that aspect because it just shows their commitment to good user friendliness, you know, good user adoption, good user experience, all that kind of stuff. They are 100% user first and they give you a really great opportunity to learn. And they've got a great newsletter as well that I like to read. So guys, eToro, they're great. We love them. Thank you guys so much for everything you do. And without further ado, let's just pop back on over.
Okay. Now we're going to move on to fire tweets.
Fire tweets.
Yes. So the CEO of Celsius, Alex Mashinsky, had some pretty good life advice to share. He said, "So many people keep asking me, what is the secret to happiness? It's not hard. Someone to love, something to do, and something to look forward to. If you've got these three and you're still not happy, well, then I just can't help you." But that is so nice. It's so simple and true and effective. Someone to love. In my darkest, awful moments in life, I always had Clyde, my cat, and it got me through. It's just something as simple as that. You just had someone to love and something to do. We all need something to do. I didn't have anything to do at that point in my life as I was coming off of disability, and I found crypto, and I became obsessed with learning about crypto. So I had something to do, and I had something to love, and this was right before the big bull run. So that immediately gave me something to look forward to, as all this crypto was going up. And suddenly, from my misery, I became a very happy person, just from those three small things. Like, nothing else changed in my life. I still didn't have a whole lot of money. I still wasn't where I wanted to be in my career or my romance life or physical fitness or any of that stuff. But just these three small things really, really changed the outlook. And I really encourage people to keep things as simple as possible, which is hard for smart people because we see a lot of the details and we can get caught up in it often. But just keep things simple. And I think these three things are really, really true. It's the keys to happiness.
100%, man. And I love my boys. You know, I think I just tweeted this out the other day. I was just reflecting and just meditating on some points of gratitude. And, you know, I love my job, right? I love who I work with. I love my buddies. And I just got an overwhelming sense of like, wow, I just love my life. And, you know, it's always important to make sure that you're reaching out to the friends that you're thankful for and just reminding them that you do appreciate them, because the more gratitude that you give out, it's the more gratitude that you are going to be receiving as well. Which is, you know, it's cliche, but it's cliche for a reason. Is you get what you give. You put good energy out there and you make good positive actions towards friends and, you know, even enemies. You put that good energy out there and you're going to get that back. So you always got to be the bigger person. You always have to have, you know, goals and setting goals, like how he said, you know, something to look forward to, right? You always have to be making sure that you're setting realistic goals, and that when you hit them, you know, you do a little inventory check and say, you know, what did I learn by hitting this goal? Was this goal overzealous? Was it not big enough? All that kind of thing. And then boom, set a new goal. So goals are very, very, very important for happiness. And if you don't have any goals right now, whether it's in finances or in relationships or in a skill or a hobby, set goals and, you know, make them, you know, realistic and achievable. And you will basically see that your happiness levels are going to skyrocket. So, Pete, that was a fire tweet, and thanks for finding that.
Sure.
One for
and just a
good citizens of Crypt Nation.
And just to follow up on that, there was something else that I read a long time ago. It says, always have a vacation planned. And that slots right into something to look forward to, because real life is stressful. It's full of challenges and obstacles and drama and things that are really, you know, can drag you down. But if you always have a vacation, there's light at the end of the tunnel. It doesn't need to be a crazy vacation. It doesn't need to be anything more than just a simple camping trip. But it's knowing that on this date at this time, all my worries are going to be put on pause for a while and I get to take a break. So always have a vacation planned as early and often as possible.
I agree. And I'll even extend that analogy. I feel like this is just the episode of extended analogies and stuff. But what I was going to say is, like, even go on a vacation where you don't have internet service or cell service. Like a couple of weeks ago, I was on a camping trip and I was, you know, talking to the guys like, oh yeah, don't worry. I'll have my phone. I'll have internet service. It'll be great. You know, we're not going that deep into the woods. And sure enough, I get there and I don't have any service. And your first instinct is like, oh, well, crap. Well, how am I going to stay connected? If something comes up at work, which things did come up at work that I didn't get any texts about because I didn't have service. But it also is very, very relaxing and freeing for your mind and your mental capacity and your emotional health and your stress levels to realize that, like, oh, I'm out of control. You know, there's things happening in the world, but I'm going to be here in the moment, right? I'm going to enjoy the present and not let the outside world necessarily affect my mental state. So that was also an interesting experience, because I'd never been out of service for, like, or maybe not never, but it's been literally probably a decade since I hadn't had service for 4 days. So that was a pretty interesting thing too. So when you're planning these vacations for, you know, self-improvement and, you know, self-love essentially and relaxation, it could be an interesting thing to not bring or, you know, just turn your phone in airplane mode.
It almost sounds like an alien concept to be disconnected from the world and right. Just left to our own immediate surroundings. But with that distraction or that connection gone, you find other things to fill it, whether it's your own thoughts or just interacting with the nature around you. It's a whole different experience, something that is much more natural, in fact. So it's definitely not a bad thing. Give it a try. I tried it on a 26-day road trip that ended up having me in, like, Yellowstone National Park. And by that time, I was like, I can't wait to get back to my computer. But it's good for a few days anyway.
Yeah, it's like fasting. You know, like, fasting is supposed to be really good for your body because you deprive it of some nutrients. And so your body goes into work a little bit harder and go into overdrive and all that kind of stuff. So when you deprive your body of these really quick, you know, releases of instant gratification and dopamine, whether it is with snacks and sweets and all that kind of stuff, or whether it is with the instant gratification of a social media platform, when you deprive your brain of those inputs for even just a few days or a day at a time, when you get back, you know, it's that much better. So let's move on over to our Scorched Earth segment. And this one This is a pretty interesting one because it's super timely.
Yes.
Scorched Earth is where we talk about, you know, how people in the industry are getting burned. And Pete, who is the recipient of the burning this week?
That would be the good citizens of Crip Nation that's getting burned. Primarily those of us who reside in the U.S. of A.
And who is doing the burning?
Our tremendous U.S. government.
That is right. So, and even more so, I would say China is also doing some burning on the U.S. government.
Oh, yeah.
Which is by proxy burning the American citizens. So why are we talking
about
this?
Well, we're not rooting
this?
For China, by the way. We're USA number one all the way, but we also look at the scorecard and going, oh, crap.
Right. Yeah, President Xi Jinping of China just yesterday on Friday released a big statement on how he wants blockchain to be a main focus of the Chinese regime, the Chinese nation state. And he basically put out this speech or like gave a speech about the importance of blockchain and the importance of having a digital Chinese dollar and the importance of being a leader in that space. So that was really interesting that he put that out there. And at the same time, you know, earlier this week, we had the U.S. Congress essentially saying the other thing or the opposite thing to what, you know, China was saying, where they say, hey, you know, this technology could be so threatening to us. We need to be slow to adopt it. We need to be cautious. Obviously, we want to continue to be an innovation leader, but their desire to be an innovation leader and their actions are actually divergent. And we saw them grilling Mark Zuckerberg, who is trying to do, the Libra coin with Facebook. And they brought him in for interrogation, or what they call just a hearing. But these senators or these congressmen and women are sometimes just so nasty and uninformed and digressive, and they're trying to make a point, and then they just like start talking about something else. And you could just see that like they're just not really equipped for this technological innovation. And I was actually listening to an amazing podcast from our friend Laura Shin, who has the Unchained podcast. She had Representative Patrick McCarthy, I want to say, Patrick McHenry.
Yeah, McHenry.
One of them. McHenry, thank you. And he is a senator or a congressman. I always get those two confused. He's a congressman. And he was talking about how he's working a bill right now with a bunch of other smart people in Congress. And by bunch, he's like, look, there's only a handful of us. He goes, you know, Congress is big. There's literally a small group that are pro Bitcoin and pro crypto and all that kind of stuff. Anyhow, he's trying to pass the Financial Services Innovation Act, where basically every single office that has regulatory capabilities, whether it's the SEC or the CFTC, all these offices will have within it an office of financial innovation, whereby a company, a private company, a public company can go to that office within the SEC and apply for all sorts of exemptions from normal laws. And so he says, there needs, you know, he basically equated it to a sandbox. But he's like, I liked what he said. He goes, I don't think I like the term sandbox because it means you're playing and it's just a scrap thing, right? He goes, no, this is a public, permanent, open beta. And I'm like, wow, that's really a really cool mindset for a congressman to have, of saying, hey, we realize that, you know, the SEC and CFTC, everybody's here for the good of the consumer in theory, right? Consumer protection, all that stuff. So we don't get taken advantage of by all sorts of fraudsters and over leveraged people and banks and all that kind of stuff. So they're in theory here for consumer protection, but the regulations that they impose are just so constricting that innovation gets stifled. And so he's noticing this, and he's talking about China, and he's saying, look, China is doing the opposite of what we're doing. They're encouraging investment into they're encouraging investment into all sorts of different innovation platforms and projects and all sorts of stuff. We need to be doing the same. So he's introducing this bill, and I'll be reading the bill and assessing it, and then ideally voting for it when the time comes. or not, you know, not voting for it, but for rooting for it and definitely voting for that guy, the congressman. He's the man. So anyhow, so that's kind of scorched earth. Let's move on to the news. And, you know, we already talked about the big news out of China on Friday when they had a, you know, President Xi's big kind of, you know, just his speech on the importance of blockchain technology to the entire nation of China. So that's bullish for Bitcoin.
Absolutely.
That's bullish for all crypto. But what else do we have, Pete? I think you were mentioning that there was a global financial innovation network that we're working on here.
Yeah. So there's a global financial innovation network, which unfortunately is not something that comes out of the US. So if that in itself tells us that we're behind because we're not innovating these things. This is from the UK's Financial Conduct Authority that started it. And it's an international alliance of government regulators to try and test out all of these technologies that are being built right now. To say, hey, could we actually upgrade our whole global banking system on something? So the SEC, the CFTC, and something called the OCC is also being joined by the FDIC to join this global financial innovation network. And they're all going to start trying to work together. So it's a global group of regulators.
It's like a think tank?
No, it's a global group of regulators who are going to say, okay, we're going to look into distributed ledger technology and cross-border solutions and just see how it might work. So they're going to stress test it. They're going to security test it. They're going to actually get some hands-on experience with crypto and blockchain. It's no longer just going to be some talking points in a courtroom. They're going to actually have these U.S. bodies are now joining the rest of the world to see how this stuff is actually going to work and potentially change the world.
Awesome. And then a couple other points I wanted to make that I thought were really significant. You know, Bakkt, who we've talked about for the physically settled Bitcoin futures, very big fundamental player in the space. They introduced Bitcoin options. So that's good. That gives, you know, financial institutions more ability to hedge their position and more liquidity and more, you know, excuse the pun, but more options to make money and to hedge their risk. So that is really good. And we're actually starting to see the volume on Bakkt skyrocket. So as everybody knows, or if you don't know, it was a big meme in crypto Twitter whereby Bakkt on its first couple days only traded a few Bitcoin. You know, on its opening day, it traded 4 Bitcoin. And the next day, it traded maybe 10 or 20. And these levels were really, really, really low. But this past week, we've seen, you know, consecutive days, 500, 600, 700 Bitcoin being traded on Bakkt. And then today, or yesterday on Friday, we saw well over 1,000 Bitcoin being traded, which was so far the all-time high. But it doesn't look like that's going to be slowing down anytime soon. The trend is that the volume is increasing on these, you know, big up days. So that's a really good sign for the industry, because that is not faked volume. That is not wash traded. Like a lot of the, like we see in Bitcoin, like, oh, Bitcoin traded $60 billion today. And you go look at where that $60 billion was coming from. And, you know, 45 billion of it was coming from these offshore, totally fake volume exchanges, all that kind of stuff. And there's so many games that these exchanges play, and they're mostly, you know, they're just bad actors that just try and, you know, wash trade. Basically, wash trading is where you open an order, you just trade between yourself. So it's just fake volume.
Right.
So I think the increase in institutional volume, both at the CME and at Bakkt and all sorts of different products like this, it's just a great sign, and it's just a great tidbit of news to say that, you know, we're almost through the thick of it, and I can't wait. I just absolutely can't wait for the halving in May 2020, where we're going to see, you know, the inflation of Bitcoin get cut in half. So right now there's about 1,800 Bitcoin that get produced or mined every day. That's the inflation rate of Bitcoin, which is about 12.5 Bitcoin every 10 minutes. And that gets cut in half through the Bitcoin algorithm, right? It's an, a difficult, or sorry, it's not a difficult, it's a, just, yeah, it's a, just an algorithm that basically, it's a step function that every 4 years, the inflation gets cut in half. So this is really good for Bitcoin, and we're going to see a massive price run up here. I mean, ideally leading into the halving in May 2020, but certainly following the halving.
Yeah. So I feel like this is one of the few I've been this excited in crypto maybe as many times as I can count on one hand. I'm so excited right now. Even wow. Looking at the overall market cap, it's not even 250 billion. It was barely just above 200 billion yesterday before the big price spike happened to bring it back up. But I felt like there's so many special things happening. There's so much growth potential, and not just in ideas anymore, like stuff that's actually being built and being built by reputable people, not just random guys you've never heard of. So this is really, really cool. Super, super excited for next year and the years to come.
Yeah. 100%, man. Me and you both in Crypt Nation, we hope you guys are excited. We hope you guys enjoyed this episode. If you did, go ahead, give us a follow on Twitter. We're at Crypto101Pod. You guys know the drill. We live stream on a platform called YouNow every day at 1 p.m. So go check us out there. This week, we're going to have a little bit of a hairy schedule because Pizza Mind's going to be in Vegas for World CryptoCon. If you're there, please reach out to him. Please reach out to us. We'd love to get you guys in touch with him if you're Vegas-based or if you're going to be traveling there. I myself will be in San Francisco next week for San Fran Blockchain Week, you know, conducting interviews, meeting people. Getting people queued up for the virtual summit that we're hosting in January of 2020 called the Crypto 2020 Summit, where people are going to be painting their vision for the future of crypto in 2020, essentially. That one's going to be super exciting. So queuing all that stuff up. So the YouNow streams are going to get we're just going to be hopping in and hopping out. So next week's going to be a little off, but you know, the week of the 4th of November, we'll be back on our regular schedule, 1 p.m. Pacific, every day live. Come chat with us. Come hang out. We've got a great community there. It's a lot of fun. And yeah, without further ado, we love you guys and have yourselves a great weekend. And we wish you the best going into next
week. Absolutely. Take care, guys. It's good to be back with you. We'll see you again next week.